Hello and welcome to Think Rant. I'm John Stabler.
I'm Steve Brett.
And again, we have our special guest with us, Hazel James. Say hello.
Nosweta, good evening.
Oh, a bit of foreign culture there.
Don't you call me foreign.
Doing our bit for multiculturalism.
Well, you know, we belong to a
multicultural society.
We're in Wales, and therefore, dwi'n siarad Cymraeg. I speak Welsh.
So, this week we got another special topic, and to give us a little intro is Steve.
Okay, we're going to be talking about this evening parenthood, whether it's a right or a privilege. And just to follow up on recent comments about not having done any research and preparing for these sessions, I don't necessarily feel I have to, but you know.
Oh, he does listen to us.
Today I've gone to a bit of effort, and I've actually, when I say prepared, I've printed something out off the internet anyway, which I'm going to read out, which will just set the context, I think, for the discussion tonight quite nicely. So, having children is increasingly, in fact, if not in law, viewed as a right rather than a privilege. With available and developing medical technology, there are more chances of couples previously unable to have children, e.g. homosexuals, postmenopausal women, and medically barren couples, to be able to assist nature. Essentially, the debate is an extension of current arguments over the use and legitimacy of treatments such as IVF and surrogacy. Recent examples relevant to this debate include, in 2002, the British HFEA decided that the Hashimi families were allowed to ensure that their next child would have the genetic capability to treat the thalassemia of their elder sibling. However, in the same year, they denied permission to the Whittaker family to do the same for their child, who suffered from a fatal form of anemia. In 2001, the Supreme Court in Wisconsin ruled that a father of nine who refused to pay child maintenance should not be allowed to father more children, but the judges were split, three upholding the constitutional right to reproduce. So, I guess there's a few things there to pick up on, which we can start on. About this, obviously, you know, we touch upon Save Your Siblings, a game which we've touched upon before. There's the precedent which was set with the Hashimi family, which then was ignored when it came to the Whittaker family. And then, obviously, then, you know, coming from a little bit more possibly, I don't know, right-wing position, we could say, the Supreme Court in Wisconsin. So let's open it up. What do people think?
Yeah, and I'd also like to mention a story that prompted this topic for me anyway, which was this week. Drug addicts across the UK were being paid money to be sterilised by an American charity. This charity was called Project Prevention, and it was offering £200 to any drug dealer, sorry, drug user. Maybe they were trying to solicit.
For drugs, yeah.
Nice
for drugs.
Words there, John.
Yeah, they were trying to buy them out.
Yeah.
No, they were offering £200 to drug users to sterilise them. And I think the principle behind this was that obviously drug users aren't fit parents, so therefore they shouldn't be having children. And so the best preventative measure would be to have them sterilised.
I don't think you can say they wouldn't make fit parents. It's the fact that they would be irresponsible parents.
Well, that's who the same
knows?
Thing.
No, 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 no. Who knows that somebody who's on drugs can't come off them and then turn around and be a model person because they've gone through all that rubbish or whatever they want to call it themselves. Therefore, they know how or which way they should lead their children to not do it. You can't say they wouldn't be fit. If they were still drug addicts, they wouldn't be responsible enough, and therefore they would become unfit parents, yes.
Okay. So, what do you think of the charity's motives?
You can see the reasoning for it. By the same token, they... Sometimes, I have read it somewhere, that they sterilise severely disabled people. For the same reason that they shouldn't have children, because they wouldn't be able to look after them.
Well, that's good, and I actually did want to touch on that as well in a bit. But so do you agree with the motives, or do you agree with the way that they're doing it?
Well, I suppose in some respects, if you are a drug taker and somebody offers you £200, that could possibly kill you if you're given drugs by that. If you buy drugs by that £200, and whether you decide you weren't going to have children anyway, but if you can get 200 quid out of having a fairly straightforward operation these days, then you can see the drug user abusing the system by doing that, but also the charity then gains by the fact that they can't have children anyway if they were to have a mishap and get pregnant.
So what if, say, there was a drug user who took the £200, got sterilised, but then they decided that they wanted to have children? Do you think that they would be within their right to go and get a reversal on the NHS?
They'd have to prove that they weren't a drug taker then, because the reason they were sterilised in the first place was because they were on drugs.
Yeah, but they were sterilised by a charity, in effect.
Well, it still has to be done medically, doesn't it? It's not something you
can take. Yeah, sure, but it's done voluntary.
Privately done, yeah, not to the NHS.
Yeah.
Probably the NHS wouldn't do it. If you went to the NHS and said, I want to be sterilised because I'm on drugs, they probably would say, no, I'm not doing it.
Well, no, that's the point, isn't it? The charity sets up the sterilisation and pays them £200 privately. But the point is John's making is that if 2 years down the line that person suddenly decides they want to have kids, is it right for that person then to go to the NHS, because bear in mind the charity's long gone now, to go to the NHS and say, I want my vasectomy or whatever reversed?
Not really. That person should have a conscience as to why they had the sterilisation done in the first place.
Well, what if they've cleaned up?
Well, then yes, I suppose they could have a reversal if they've cleaned up.
And, you know, that for me is the whole issue with this.
But then this charity
is suggesting, this is my whole issue with the whole thing, this charity is suggesting that you're not going to clean up, you're not getting off drugs. Now, sure, there are people who habitually abuse drugs throughout their life. Absolutely understand that, but I would rather see that £200 spent on trying to re-educate and get that person clean rather than preventing them having children.
Yes, I can see
which
that.
Which I think is a far more beneficial way of actually dealing with that problem. You know, this kind of ties in with some of the stuff we spoke about before. You know, you can say, okay, I'm going to sterilise that person because they're a junkie, but who knows what their offspring could produce?
Yeah.
You know, we don't know. You know, again, going back
yes,
to that trolley
problem. Yes, but
if they got
pregnant while they're on drugs, Stephen, the implications
well, of
what can happen to the fetus
absolutely,
is...
Absolutely, you could. But then, you know, let's face it, how many women have drink glasses of wine? How many women smoke during pregnancy?
Yes.
Are we going to sterilise them as well?
A lot of people who have children should have been sterilised donkeys years ago.
Well, that's a separate issue, isn't it? You know, yeah. What we're saying is I agree with your point, I take it on board, that there's a very clear and dangerous risk to drug taking when you're pregnant for the health of the child inside you as well as your own health.
Mm.
Totally understand that, totally get that. But I would rather see that money spent on drug prevention and something which would help something to get off drugs rather than actually stopping them having children. Because as you've said what you said earlier, you're giving them £200, they're just going to go off and score their next hit.
Yes, which will kill them more.
Which is what they're going to do with it, you know.
Mm.
That's just £200 literally being injected into somebody's arm or snorted up somebody's nose.
Yeah.
First, and I'd like to say, I think that the charity are actually doing perhaps something that's immoral, in so much that they are actually preying on people who are actually vulnerable.
Because they need the money for their next hit.
They need the money for the drugs. And they and the charity, I think that they know that.
This is the thing, is it a charity?
It is a charity, it's an American charity.
Do they get funding through
charity? Why are they working in the UK? Why aren't they working in America?
They're spreading their message, I guess, of, you know...
I guess so, but...
Are they a cult?
And I'm not saying it's...
Not that I know of.
I'm not saying it's right in America either, but I think there's a difference between the American welfare system and the UK welfare system, whereby...
Well, you have to pay for medical treatment.
But yeah, what I'm trying
anyway.
To say is, I think in America, there's going to be less opportunity for somebody to get clean off drugs than there is in the UK. I think we've got a better support system for people
right.
who genuinely want to get off drugs, and so can, you know, go to a charity here who will help them get clean and put their life back in order, if that's what they want to do, than there is in America, because we have, well, had a better funded welfare state.
Right. Yeah.
And in America, you go to rehab, you get a bill at the end of it.
Precisely.
Right.
And also, but I'd like to just maybe think about, if somebody was a junkie and they wanted to reverse the sterilisation, do they still have a right? They'd have an inalienable right to...
And they're still on drugs?
Yeah.
But then they would be asked, why did you get sterilised in the first place?
And I don't know. I don't think the NHS...
The NHS wouldn't care about that. That would be irrelevant.
Well, they do. They have to ask you, why did you get sterilised? You don't get sterilised on a whim.
But plenty of people, you can say you made a mistake.
Well, like anyone who has a vasectomy, surely
right.
they did it for
it
a reason.
It happens. Somebody has a
mind.
Vasectomy because they're with their existing partner. They've had three children, we'll say, and they decide they don't want any more children. It's much easier for a man to have a vasectomy than the woman to be sterilised. It's much less of an operation. The man then, that part of the relationship breaks down. The man meets somebody else. She doesn't have any children, and they want a child between them. And yes, they, in the normal world, you can go for a sterilisation, but they would ask you why, for reversal, I mean, if they ask you why were you sterilised in the first place, and if you said it was because I was a junkie and I came off drugs, well, are you still taking drugs? Well, they're going to lie and say, no, I'm not. This is why,
yeah, but the chances are, if they were asked that, they would just lie anyway and say I had a sterilisation because I'd had three kids in a previous partnership and
they'd have to prove that, wouldn't they? They wouldn't just take it as
read. They wouldn't have to prove it. How would they prove it? Because at the end of the day, it was done by a private medical centre. There's not going to be a record of it on their NHS file or anything.
And I also think, we're kind of looking too much into it. I think the NHS, by the nature of how they work, things like the Hippocratic Oath,
would do it.
Medical profession, would look at it and they would say this person has a right to children if they want it. So even if they were still
a
junkie.
You don't have a right to children, though, do you?
This is what we're talking about.
It's a God-given privilege, children.
Well, I'd like to see you back that up.
I would disagree with that. And I would say that actually, for me, this, again, we talk about consistency in what we're talking about. So this boils down to me. If we're saying a junkie who's been sterilised cannot have a reversal or should not have children, that to me is almost along the same lines as saying a fat person can't have heart treatment on the NHS because they're there because of their own circumstances. A smoker can't have treatment for lung cancer because they're there because of their own circumstances. At the end of the day, that person, I think, does have a right to have children. I think having children is a privilege, and I think that's a privilege which is a great privilege in life and shouldn't be abused. But I also think it's a right to have children at the same time.
I think we'd all agree that it's actually the question posed, is it a right or a privilege, is a false dichotomy, and it's actually both. I think we all agree on that.
No, it's very difficult because there's so many people out there who are desperate for children, which is why obviously they've developed IVF and surrogacy and everything like that. And I look up to the women who can do surrogacy. I don't think it can be easy to actually give birth to a child and give it to somebody else, because you nurture that child within you for 9 months, albeit when I've read about all these, some of these people who are surrogates and everything like that, they say they can detach themselves from the child. They're only carrying it for somebody else, but that child is still kicking you and keeping you awake at night because he's having a stretch when you want to sleep and all things like this. Whether you think it's your child or not, it's still within your body. And as I say, if they can do it, I think they're to be applauded for the right reasons.
And it's interesting, the law as well, because I believe in the States they can charge for it. They can charge like up to $50,000 or something to be a surrogate. In this country, you're not allowed to charge for it.
You're allowed to charge for medical.
Sorry, you're allowed to charge expenses, yes.
Yes.
But you're not allowed to charge for it.
You can't charge for the actual child.
Yeah.
No.
However, in this country, the law is, it's her baby. When she gives birth, she can actually just say, no, I'm going to keep it anyway. Mm. So, you know, she does have those rights.
Because the child obviously has the... I'm not sure. It's usually an implanted IVF child, isn't it? So the parents are actually...
Yeah.
So the genetic code is of the
genetic
parents,
is of the two parents, isn't it? Not the surrogate.
Even if that's the case, she can still keep it because she's...
Because she's given birth to it, yeah.
But hang on, we're getting a bit sidetracked now, aren't we?
Mm.
So what do you think, John? Because I think we've given our opinion.
No, all right, hang on.
I'm just getting back on track. So I think a good place to get back on track would be to start with your opinion and see what you think on it.
I mean, I'm personally, I think people have a right to have children. We all have that right. If we are to accept that everybody is equal, then from the Prime Minister down to the crack addict on the corner, you know, we deserve to have children. I'm kind of, you know, it annoys me a bit that, you know, the taxpayer has to pay for sterilizations to be reversed, but that's just from a fiscal sense, you know, just that it's costing people money. But I would actually be blaming the charity that's taking advantage of helpless people they're the ones that are making them get sterilised, you know, by putting the carrot on the stick. And I don't think it's a good way to tackle the problem.
No, well, it doesn't tackle it. Pardon the pun. Doesn't tackle the problem at all, does it?
No, no. So,
in fact, you know, it creates another problem. So, again, I think we're all in agreement on that as well.
Well, I don't know. Hazel, do you think the charity is... Do you think they should be allowed to carry on? Or?
No, I agree with you. They're playing on vulnerable people. If you... You know, a drug addict needs a good financial backing to keep its habit going, depending what it's on. But even so, I mean, I've never, ever seen drugs. I've never... known the price of drugs or anything like that. I'm a goody two shoes, aren't I?
Yeah. Smack ain't cheap, I don't think, is it, Steve?
Well, exactly. This
actually,
is what
smack
I'm thinking.
Is hang on, what's cheap at the moment?
Oh, it's Coke that's expensive.
No, Coke is quite cheap as well.
What's expensive then?
So, what are you looking at? I mean, heroin, I suppose,
well,
is expensive, is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's smack.
That's smack.
All right.
Well, no, because of the cheap influx of drugs from, you know, places like Afghanistan and what have you, and, you know, there's far more of it out there now than actually drugs are quite cheap.
So what are you calling cheap? £5 for something?
I don't know, because
or...
I've never bought drugs,
right,
so I wouldn't
okay.
know. But I think it is fact that actually it's cheaper now than it's ever been. But, I mean, particularly cocaine, I think, because cocaine a couple of years ago, I don't know, was
had the reputation for being the rock stars drug.
Exactly, yeah, you know, when
people would
50
put,
quid a
put
gram
pipe,
and all this sort of stuff.
Okay,
but
so
I think that's come right down in person. I have no idea what it is.
Well, let's
but
say, for
the
instance,
amount of people,
then,
the amount of people doing it...
Without any of us knowing what price it is, let's just say, on average, a gram is a tenner.
Yeah,
okay?
Fine, okay,
just so we've got something to go on. So this person is offered, they need a gram a day. Oh, I don't know, how much is a gram?
Well, yeah, I mean, that cocaine's slightly different, because, I mean, they...
What do they do with that, inject it or snort
it? No, they snort it, but it's kind of not considered to be...
It's
not like an addictive drug in the sense of...
Oh, you just get kicked out of it at
the time. In the sense
of,
say, something like crack.
Right.
Or something like heroin, where you have
so
to
like
have
so like people taking e-tablets then, is it? They do
well,
it
well no, because that's what they call a recreational drug as well, because that kind of...
Yeah, that's what I meant. I was comparing
yeah,
it to
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. I guess right. The high does become addictive to some extent, but it's not... Well, at least I don't think it's physically
so
addictive
somebody,
in the same way as heroin
right,
is or
if
crack
somebody
cocaine.
Needs a drug to be able to go out and enjoy themselves on, every Friday night... Okay, they're still taking drugs. They're not an addict because they don't.
Yeah, but
on
no.
It.
I mean, we're looking at see something like heroin or
you're
something.
You're looking
like
at somebody who's dependent on
a better
right. Okay, somebody's dependent on heroin. They can't face a day until they get a heroin
yeah,
injection.
Yeah, that's
a physical
that's a
addiction.
Right, that's where they put the band around their arm, pull it really tight, and then inject. Is that
see,
the one?
You know all about
well,
drugs.
You see it on the telly, don't you?
Or they, you know, chase the dragon, or you know.
Right,
lots
so
of different ways of
you're
it,
you're
really.
Looking at vulnerable people who need a hit, as you say, to get by. So therefore, somebody's dangling £200 in front of them, and they're thinking, "Oh my God, that lasts me
all
3 weeks."
3 weeks, you wish. No, weekend probably.
So you know, it's still £200, which they haven't got to look for. They haven't got to steal or be on the game or whatever they do to get their money. I don't know. Some of these people might work in very high jobs, do they?
I don't
some
think
people
it,
do. I mean,
yeah.
Look, you know, drugs can affect all walks of life. I think that's one of the key points, isn't it? Yeah, is that actually you could be somebody who is in a high position job, earning a great wage, but you could still be addicted to heroin.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you could be technically a junkie, but you could be able to give any child that you have a very privileged upbringing. Because you have the financial backing to be able to do it.
You'd probably be in and out of rehab a lot, and the kid would be brought up by its grandparents or some relative.
Or you send him to public school or something like that, you know. But, you know, there is... You know,
so something that would need the £200 then, would
well,
they?
Well, no, exactly. But any the point I'm trying to make is anyone can be a junkie.
Right.
Yeah, you know, you don't have to be down on your
down
arse
and out. Right.
Living
no.
in a box
right.
to be a junkie.
Okay. But they would be the ones that this charity would be targeting.
Oh, for
them,
sure, yeah.
They? Because they're not going to target the guy who lives in the big posh house with the Bentley and all the rest of it, are they?
No.
So
no,
the charity
exactly,
is
no.
ethically wrong then, aren't they? Because
yes,
they are preying on the vulnerable.
Yeah, exactly, which was our point, really, is that actually it is they are preying on the vulnerable. And, you know, that's the thing which I think is quite reprehensible about the charity, to be honest with you. I'm amazed it's actually got charity status. Be honest with you.
Well, it's an American charity.
Is it just
charity.
A charity in America
yeah,
or is it a charity
it
in the UK? Because
it wouldn't get charity status in the UK.
No, exactly. And I would, you know, strenuously fight against any sort of thing which would lead to that. Because
yeah.
I think what they're doing is reprehensible. you know, if private citizens in America want to fund that, fair enough. You know, I don't agree with it, but we can't stop
that. Do they
know
what
that.
They're funding by supporting this charity, though?
Well,
the charity
crazy.
Might
yeah,
be telling them
do.
That they...
Yeah,
they
there's crazies in America who support all sorts of things.
Off drugs, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I wanted to move on, staying with the same theme, obviously, but we're looking at, you know, rights, privileges, whether we should be interfering.
Mm-hmm.
Population control.
Like in China, you mean?
Like in China, yeah. They've got this policy of, you know, one child per couple. You know, they got a couple of get-out clauses. You know, things like Steve's waving his piece of paper in case...
Because what you're saying, John, is a very interesting fact, but does not hold true for developed countries where the main demographic problem is an ageing population. The elderly will only be supported if the rate of procreation rises. In fact, it will soon be a duty to have children to support the elderly.
Yes.
And which country is that in us?
That's the Western society.
Western society. Right. And it's quite interesting because I looked at a map of the number of children being born per couple, or what the average birth rate was, really. That's what it is. And China have this enforced policy.
Yeah.
But they achieve the same rate as us, just here.
Because everybody would have one child then, I suppose. Whereas here, people make a choice of not to have children.
Exactly, so...
And I think in China, people have lots of nieces and nephews as well. Because in China, this is one of the horrible things about the Chinese law about having one child per couple. Everybody wants a boy.
Yes.
You have a little girl, they get abandoned, they get killed, murdered, they get left on the street, they give
yes,
them to other family members, other relatives, do you know what I mean? Basically...
So that you're...
There are ways and means around...
Says she has another child.
Precisely, there are right. ways and means around this, you know. They don't even declare the pregnancies. You know, they don't register them. So there's no records of these kids until they have a boy, and then they have their one child, and that's it.
I mean, obviously, this is illegal in
China. Yeah, absolutely, it's an illegal practice in China, but it happens.
Yeah, it's just a side effect.
Because of this draconian law where you're going to have one child, but also because of the culture
in
China.
How long has that law been there?
Oh, it's got to be at least
70s, wasn't it?
Well, yeah,
80s, yeah,
so early 80s.
It's not been that many years, is it? It's not. You know, why did they bring that in? Did they have multiple children?
Well, they brought it in because they were concerned about the population explosion, because China is it's a vast country.
Don't one-third of the world population live in China?
And it's like 5 billion or something live there, something like that?
It's pretty large. Oh, no, it can't be that much. Last time I checked, it was 7 billion world population.
But, you know, when you consider that I have cousins who were born late 50s and early 60s, of families of six or seven. And then I have quite a few cousins. There's three to the family. And then most of us, the rest of us were twos. Mm. Everybody had sort of 2.4 children was the thing they said years ago.
That's the statistic. But it's actually dropped below that. It's dropped to two.
Yes.
And taking into account, obviously, deaths by natural
ways. Yeah, but people are living much longer, aren't they?
Well, yeah, and that's the ageing population.
And that's the issue of the ageing population. So,
but my point, the only point I wanted to make was China enforcing this policy. However, we're able to achieve it naturally anyway.
Mm.
So that, forcing people to only have one child is coercive and it's unfair.
Absolutely.
So if that child...
Because you're taking away the person's right to have a child.
If that child died, would they then be able to have another one?
Yes, they would.
Yeah, they would. They have certain get-out clauses for things. Like, if obviously you get pregnant with twins, they're not going to make you get rid of one or anything like that.
Right,
you
okay.
And
do they have problems in China with infertility and things like that? Is it known?
I think what brought this around the actual policy, and I may be incorrect here, but I think what brought it around was China had an exploding population. And I think they do have a strong propensity for girls to be born. In fact, I think more girls are born than boys anyway.
I think that's a natural biological thing anyway.
So obviously, you know, population-wise, they're having a lot of girls.
It always works
out. And in China, boys are what everyone wants, because, you know, that's the way the society
is.
You
can look after... If you're only going to have one, you need someone to look after you, and so therefore the boy is better.
But in the ratio,
that's why they brought in the one policy, because people were trying to have boys.
Of boys and girls, you usually find if you had six pregnant women, you would probably have four girls and a boy. And two boys. Sorry, six, two and four. Then your next batch of pregnant women, batch of six, would have four boys and two girls.
Yeah, but statistically, there are more girls born than boys. Fact.
Yeah, I mean, there's no point you saying to me, I come from a big family where everyone's got five kids. Just like an anecdote. What we're saying is the average of, you know, these things.
Mm. More girls are born than boys. Mm.
So, none of us are in favour of population control.
No.
No.
Because I personally think it's not even necessary because we're able to achieve it anyway. We're in a Western civilization. People can afford, you know, you don't need to have 20 kids because, you know, 17 of them are going to die of malaria or anything like that.
No, exactly.
No, and but again, though, you see, in the third world countries, I often look at it and think, well, surely, you know, we need to give these people aid to survive and everything like that. And I seriously think that if they had less children, they would have less mouths to feed. I know a lot of these children die. Out of five children, maybe two will only survive to adulthood. Right, but they only had two children, then they would be able to sustain those two children more, look after them better, able to feed them better.
Yeah, but I think in a lot of countries where the problem is poverty, they're not actually interested in looking after the children as best they can. They're actually interested in the children being able to go out and work and keep the family going.
Yeah, but
because I think there's a couple of issues there, actually, Hazel. I can kind of see where you're coming from.
I've always maintained that if we go to these countries and give them aid and show them how to dig the ground and have water and everything, we should also be giving them birth control.
Well, you see, yeah, and here is the issue, isn't it? Yeah, because that would mean then we're going in and printing our Western ways upon them, whether they want it or not, which I think is morally wrong anyway. But the issue is
they should be given the choice, shouldn't they?
Well, yeah, they should be given the choice. But this is where we're coming down to. This is the crux of it, yeah? Child mortality rates are very high. Mm. Yeah? If they have two kids and they say, right, you can't have any more kids, the chances are, yeah, the kids may be perfectly healthy at the moment. Given another 2-3 years, they could be dead.
But that can happen
anywhere. But they might not be able to have children again because they may be of an age where they can't have children. Yes, it can happen anywhere. But you shouldn't be saying to them, you only have two kids. Because you never, the child mortality rate is so high. That's one issue. And the other issue is that they don't have contraception. You know, they don't have the easy access to contraception in their society, in their cultures, rightly or wrongly.
Well, China's all right with contraception.
Hazel's talking about places where we're giving aid
right,
to.
Right, okay.
Yeah. They don't have access to contraception.
No. Well, there's other problems.
Issues there as well. For example, the Catholic Church saying contraception is against God. It's illegal.
Yeah, but are these people Catholics? They're not, are they?
Well, see, but there's a high percentage.
High percentage in Africa are Catholic. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But they should be given the choice of contraception there if they want it.
Yes, but they're being told.
Don't tell me there aren't any.
There's people telling them it's bad for them to do it.
Oh yeah, sorry. The Pope's telling them that it gives you AIDS if you put a condom.
Yeah, the Pope is telling it gives you AIDS, you get it, and you're going to go to hell.
If you use a contraception?
Yes, because you are denying the chance of life.
But then there are lots and lots of good practicing Catholics who are using contraception.
But the Pope would say they're not good practicing Catholics because they're denying.
Yeah, but the Pope doesn't.
Right.
Doesn't
but the
have...
Pope is the head of the Church and they hang on his every word.
Hang
that
on a second.
Is the whole point.
You can't forget about the big thing about Catholicism. Remember, he has the hotline. He is the mouthpiece. Of, no, I'm not.
No,
joking.
John's right. He's
he is the mouthpiece
no.
of God. Everything he says, they have to treat it that way. He is infallible.
Well, there's certain things which he can pronounce an infallible statement on. Not it's not everything he says.
No, no, no.
But he can say, "This is my infallible word,"
and
this is one of those things he said it on.
Yeah.
Contraception is wrong. So if you're a Catholic and you're using contraception, you're not a very good Catholic and you are going to burn in hell.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm glad I'm not Catholic then.
Hang on, they might be right.
Well, otherwise...
And that's my point then, you see, with the third world where we're giving them aid. Do we then not give them aid because we're saying to them...
No, he didn't say that.
I know, but that's where it progresses on to, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, I mean, we educate them into dig the ground to grow the food and everything like this. But some of them should be given the choice. Some of them are educated enough to be able to make the choice.
And they have that choice. There are plenty of agencies working in Africa who are promoting condoms and contraceptives because of the AIDS problem.
Right.
There are loads of charities
doing
that work out there. But because you've still got your tribal chieftains and the witch doctors saying it's wrong, you've still got the Pope saying it's wrong, you know, their culture says it's wrong, people just aren't using them still. They're not using that contraception.
And on this big graph, sorry, the atlas that I saw of the world and population, it was the usual story. The whole of the West and China, you know, it was like the top half was all blue, as in two children or less. And then it was the continent of Africa. It was absolutely ridiculous. India wasn't quite as bad. India, I think they've started to get a grip.
So what's the sort of average number of children then in Africa?
The one I was... Most of the countries had between 7 and 8.
But they don't survive, you see, do they, to adulthood?
Well, it's just the birth rate. It's just the
birth rate is there, but yeah, the
which obviously then drains the mother of any strength that she would have. Because anybody who's had 7 children in close succession, I mean, having one is bad enough, but having, you know, 7 in quite close succession, there are... lots of medical implications with that. You know, the mother can die in childbirth because of her mental health.
And frequently does as well.
Yes. So then you've got 6 children without a mother. If she was on her 7th pregnancy.
Yep. It was, and then the eldest child would be expected to be...
To be the mother.
But it was the number one killer at one time.
Childbirth, yes.
So
here as well.
Oh, everywhere. Worldwide. In history, I think malaria, then childbirth, then teeth. Is the one that kills you.
Teeth?
Yeah. Well, you know, we think nothing of going to the dentist if we've got a problem, but before they invented dentists...
What do you do? Well, you had an infection.
Infection city.
I suppose, Yeah, because it would go straight into your bloodstream, wouldn't it? Yeah.
So, okay, so that was quite a global kind of big chat. So what would you say, you know, tomorrow they said, right, the UK is full, okay? There's no space, okay? We won't turn this into an immigration thing because we've done that before.
And we're speaking hypothetical anyway.
And we're speaking hypothetical. Yeah. So somebody said, well, obviously they'd have stopped immigrants. If there's no space, no one can come in anyway. Okay?
No.
So let's just, no one would want to come in. What if they said, right, we're going, do you think they would be justified in bringing in some kind of birth control?
Saying only one child per couple.
Yeah, or you know, or two, but the maximum.
But two is the average these days anyway. So then,
yeah, but I'm just
no
saying,
difference?
if something had happened, say everyone became a Catholic tomorrow, okay, and then everyone had 7 kids.
Yeah, but some Catholics only have 2 children, even within
the
rules of the
Catholic really
Church.
Good at finding out. Yeah, okay. I think those are the ones that are using the contraceptives. To be fair, so do you think they would be justified in?
I think. See, this is a tough one. But I think this comes back to being a right and a privilege.
Yeah.
Because I think, actually, as a responsible citizen, you should be thinking, well, actually, no, we can't have any more kids, or we can't have families of 7 and 8 kids. Obviously, there's always got to be some sort of childbirth to keep the population going. But, you know, you would then be thinking, well, actually, no. As a citizen, I shouldn't be having that many kids because actually we can't sustain that many kids. Obviously, that's a perfect world and is unlikely to happen.
Yeah, so it's the government intervention.
I totally understand that. But that's where it becomes part of it being a privilege. But I wouldn't deny that person's right to have children.
You find in large families that the children bring each other up. Because you have your older siblings are there and will make sure that you put your socks on correctly in the morning and things like that. The mother doesn't have to do that. The mother would say, be making breakfast. And not that you're allocated a child to look after. I don't mean it like that. I know there's an American family with 14 kids that the oldest are allocated a younger child to do it. They've been on the telly a few times. I'm going to the cousins that I had. It just became a natural thing that the eldest checked on the little ones, and you were never alone. You were never bored because you always had somebody to play with. You know, whether you were playing hide and seek or whatever, there was always enough of you there to make a game. Whereas with having one child, the parents have to spend a lot more time with that child to entertain it. So there's pros and cons on both sides.
Oh no, I know that there's pros to having a large family, but that the question was, do you think the government...
But doesn't a child at the bottom of the tree then have a pretty happy life, while a child at the top of the tree is a bit of a shit one?
The child at the bottom
because
has all the hand-me-down
the
clothes, the patches, he has the last slice of bread because he's the youngest, he has the stale piece of bread...
Yeah, but doesn't have to look after, bring up any other kids, do they? They can go out and play without having to worry about what little Johnny's doing. They are little Johnny.
Yeah. No, I don't agree that the government should be able to dictate what you have. But then if society got so bad that you can appreciate how poor the country's becoming because there are so many people here, then I think everybody who is responsible would have made the effort not to have that many children anyway. And with them cutting family allowance now, it'd probably start happening.
What do you think, John?
I would say in the hypothetical world where people were that dumb that they were saying stuff everybody,
they'd just be bloody minded, wouldn't they?
Yeah, but as long as they're in the minority, it's not going to matter, is it? It's going to be balanced out. But in the world where everyone was that stupid that everybody was trying to have seven kids and the world was overpopulated, then I think that it's purely pragmatically the government would have to do something.
Yes.
However, I think it's an ill-conceived thing because it's got bad faith in mankind. Mm-hmm. I think Western civilization has already come to the realization that we must, you know, not go forth and multiply as we were commanded, but multiply a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and not go over the top. Mm. But while you have poverty and while you have, you know, the situation in the what we call the third world, I don't even like to use that term.
No, but it's what is referred to as.
But, you know, those problems need to be addressed. And I don't think they're being addressed currently by things like telling people that contraceptives are bad or, you know, that they shouldn't be using them.
You see, the Pope has a very privileged life. He has no idea what poverty is. He has no idea having to think, oh, now I've got to consider that I've got to take child one to swimming lesson at 7 o'clock, child two to play cello at 7:15.
I would disagree with you to an extent there.
He's never had to consider anybody except himself.
He wasn't born the Pope.
He wasn't born the Pope.
And that's my point, yeah? Take, for example, the last Pope, the Pope John Paul II, was born in a poor family in Poland.
Right.
Yeah? He knew what poverty was.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about him. This is the Pope.
It could be the same situation. You know, all I know about the current Pope is about his childhood. He was a member of the Hitler Youth. You know, but that doesn't give us any idea about what his social status was, how many brothers and sisters he had, what his parents had to endure, etc., etc. We don't know. He could have had a really, really crap life.
What did he do before he was Pope? He was a priest,
obviously.
But
let me finish what I'm saying. Yeah? My point is that, yes, he's in a privileged position now, where everything is done for him, but that doesn't necessarily mean he hasn't experienced that in the past. I don't think the Pope makes a decision based on his circumstances.
No.
The Pope makes a decision based upon what he thinks is his belief.
His religion, yeah. Because, you know, since he became an adult and went into the church, so I'm assuming he would have been 22, 23.
Possibly.
Because he would have done his schooling, gone to university, studied religious studies or whatever they studied to become a priest, and then gone straight into holy orders, right? Mm-hmm. So you're looking from the age of 18... He's never had to consider anybody else but himself.
No.
This is what I'm saying. And the guy is in his late 50s now, isn't he?
He's
in his
late 50s.
Yeah, but how do you know he wasn't in some kind of ministry? He might have been in the third world. He might have seen all this stuff firsthand.
That's not what I'm getting at. What I'm saying is that personally to him, his own personal life has only been about himself. He's only ever had to consider him.
Again, I would disagree with that because I think I would disagree with that because I think as a priest,
yes,
his job is not to consider himself, is to consider those people he's working with.
Yeah.
And considering the Catholic priest doesn't get paid, yes, they get a house to live in, but they don't get paid to do that.
But they
job.
Haven't got to think of seven children having to be at different events of different nights of the week. For what you're trying to give your children in a life.
I think that's kind of irrelevant, really.
He's done it for his parishioners, but if one night he decides, I'm going to cut this short tonight, I'm going to say I've got another meeting to go to, yeah, he's technically lying because he wants to go home and watch Emmerdale on the box at 7 o'clock.
Emmerdale in the Vatican?
Yeah, you never know. He's got Sky. It's a Sky dish there, I'm sure. I didn't see one when I was in Rome, mine, but... It's probably hidden in the turrets there somewhere.
I think we're ignoring the main thing is, remember, okay, this is all completely a load of rubbish, what we're talking about.
Yes.
Because he's been told what to say anyway.
Of course
so,
he has. The hotline has come down and told
so
him.
So it's, you know...
Yeah.
A lot. The thing is, people...
But he's being much of a dictator in telling people that it's bad to be on contraception, as China is telling people you can't have more than one child.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but...
There's no difference.
This is the thing, right? When a Catholic says, I don't agree with the Pope, I'm like going, that is the most nonsense... No, that's the most nonsensical thing you can say, surely.
Well, they're not really a...
Well, because if you say you don't agree with the Pope, you're saying, well, again, this depends on... You say you don't agree with the Pope when he makes an infallible statement, then basically what you're saying is you don't agree with God, isn't it?
That's what they're saying.
Effectively what you're coming from, isn't it?
And not just that, but even if he isn't, you know, putting it in stone, saying, I've had this commandment here, he is still meant to be the mouthpiece.
The
and everything
Catholic
he says
Church,
is
yes.
meant to be good. Apart from when he, you know, covers up child abuse and stuff like that. But we won't go there.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is... You can't really, it's kind of weird as attacking him, you know, saying, you know, you need to change your mind, because he can't.
No.
In theory, he can't.
No.
So.
But popes have changed, the point is, popes have changed their mind.
They have, yeah, we can only
hope. And, you know, that is one of the key things, and it's something which...
Does he feel we need more children then? Is that why you're saying it?
No, the whole point of the doctrine is contraception stops the creation of life. Creation of life is a gift from God, and it's also our purpose on earth from God is to have children. So having contraception, we are denying God's purpose for mankind.
And
well,
Thomas
controlling
Aquinas
God's purpose for mankind. It's controlling it, not
well. No, it's going against God's purpose by having contraception.
Aquinas came up with the natural laws, and he described what we should be doing is looking around at nature because it is God's creation, and so therefore what we see in nature is what should be happening. And so when we go against nature,
yes, but we do prevent nature. If you're a farmer, you decide when your cow will have a calf because you bring the bull in to the farm for that purpose. Or you bring the AI in, because not many people can keep their own bulls. There's laws into keeping a bull on a farm.
Hmm.
So you still make the conscious effort in January of every year.
Yeah, but that's not in nature then, though, is it?
You're going to fall against
That's not in nature. That's a farmer making a decision.
Well,
like
you're controlling it, aren't you?
Sorry, no, I can nip this in the bud, sorry. There was another commandment, which is you will have... dominion over all of the creatures of the earth, so that's the get-out
clause.
Okay,
right, fair enough then.
Hazel, I think you need to read your Bible a bit more, to be honest.
No.
So, that was a great little slice there. But I kind of wanted to keep on the whole, you know, life is important, because IVF was the next one that we wanted to discuss.
Yeah.
Mm.
And of course, that follows the destruction of embryos. Obviously, it's worse technically than contraceptives, because you've let the sperm and the egg get together,
and so
therefore you have the embryo.
So why are you destroying the embryo? This is the reason.
That's part of IVF, though, isn't it? Yeah, is
most,
IVF.
Yeah.
You know, they don't just take one sperm and one egg.
No.
And put them together and then put them in the woman. And
it's inefficient.
Yeah. They actually do multiple. So what they're saying is, and again, I guess this goes back to discussions John and I have had in the past.
Yes.
About when life is life. And, you know...
Not just that. When does the soul get inserted?
Yeah, because at that point, you know, you've got potentially, you know, half a dozen zygotes. I think they call it, John?
Zygote.
Sat there. All of which could produce life.
Mm.
Only one of them is going to produce life. The other five are destroyed.
But I thought people kept them for second pregnancies.
This is the destruction. You've either got destruction in the fact that three get implanted and say only one of them takes. I mean, sometimes you do get twins and things because of it. But they also keep the other ones on ice. But once they've had their children, they say, well, we don't want any more. So those are now, you know, they're on ice. They're just going to get
checked. But that's what contraception does as well at the end of the day.
Well, yeah,
that's the point. That's exactly what we're saying, yeah. Because the Catholic Church, in fact, the nutter who said he couldn't come into Terminal 5 because it was like third world country, didn't he say about IVF being sinful as well?
Yeah, of course.
Was
it
the same dude, wasn't it? Yeah. So the Catholic Church's stance on IVF is that it's wrong as well.
But IVF is definitely there to make sure that people who can't have children naturally are having children.
Absolutely. And I think IVF is an absolute marvellous treatment. I think it's wonderful.
Yes.
I think it should be embraced. But the Catholic Church's position is
that
actually, by creating that one life, you are destroying half a dozen others.
And not only that, okay, even if you didn't destroy any embryos, there's a lot of hardline Catholics who complain that it actually somehow infringes on the sanctity of marriage, especially if you've used sperm donors or egg donors or a surrogate.
But sometimes, you know, you can be married to somebody and you or your partner can't have children for whatever medical reason there is. You have no other choice than to use donor.
Doctrine doesn't take that into account, though.
Who doesn't?
Doctrine.
Oh. It says no.
If you can't have children naturally, then God has decided you're not supposed to have
God's
them.
Work. That's exactly what they're saying.
So,
we're saying, or at least I'm saying anyway, that it's somebody's right to have children.
But we've developed enough to give them that right.
Because we've developed IVF, and you know we've developed that treatment, then actually, yeah, I think absolutely, you know, if it's there, we should use it, because I think people do have a right to have children.
What was that word you used for having a child to save another one?
Save your siblings.
Yeah. I don't know whether I agree or disagree with that.
Well, we've already done this, haven't
we? Yes, you have.
And we disagreed
with it. If the only reason to have that child was an organ donor, then we disagree with it strongly.
Yes, disagree with it, as well. If they were having a child anyway and it happened to be compatible, well, then yes, you would use one child to help the other, obviously.
But there's also the problem that, say, you've got a 4-year-old child, okay, who is a donor match, even if you had the child because you wanted another child, and that child is a match for your other sibling.
Going back to our context right at the start, in 2002, the British HFEA decided that Hashmi family were allowed to ensure that their next child would have the genetic capability to treat the thalassemia of their elder sibling. So basically,
They were having a child anyway, but they genetically modified it.
Well, no, they weren't having a child anyway,
but
just that their next child could have that genetic modification to make sure that they had
the correct
here,
right?
British HFEA.
And this was PGD, in effect. This is his selection.
2002, this was. So basically, this association, I don't know what HFEA stands for, basically said, probably human
fertilization and embryology,
It basically said, yes, you can have a child
which can be genetically modified
to make sure that your elder child can get the correct treatment, which I presume is blood in this case, to keep them alive.
Then?
That's it. There's no one then.
But then there was another family who refused it.
Yeah.
And that was in Britain as well.
They're quite flaky, and that department has been scrapped due to the cuts. But my question was, so now they've had this baby for this other child. And then this child is 4, and the other sibling needs like the bone marrow transplant or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Are the parents in their right to actually take a child, a 4-year-old, or you know, maybe what the matter on the age, and say, right, get some anaesthetic on the go. We're going to take some of your body parts and go and put them in our other child. And I mean, that's kind of.
But which of those two children has the better life expectancy anyway? You know, if you, I'm going completely.
No, Carol.
If you have a 4-year-old and a 10-year-old,
mm-hmm.
the 10-year-old needs something from the 4-year-old. We say bone marrow. Okay, bone marrow donation won't kill you. A kidney donation possibly will, because your own kidney might fail.
It's still invasive surgery, which has a risk.
Yes, but you know, if by doing that surgery, you're risking the life of the youngest,
mm-hmm.
right? Because, you know, all operations have a risk.
Yeah, mm-hmm. sure.
You can catch an infection and God knows what. And then you're helping the life of the eldest to be a little bit better. But then you're making everybody's health at risk by doing it.
For me, it's tantamount to child abuse, basically. Yeah. I don't agree with it. I am absolutely amazed that the HFEA allowed that to happen. That first case with the Hashmi family, I just think it's absolutely disgraceful. It's tantamount to child abuse.
There's also the point of having genetic modification done because you know you have a defect.
That's a different issue. Yeah, that's a different issue, because that comes into the right to have a child, doesn't it, really?
I think we're going to touch on that in a bit.
So that's a different issue. What we're talking about here is having a genetically modified child
to help somebody
to ensure compatibility as a donor for another child, which is a completely different matter.
Yes.
If we're talking about genetic modification, I'm not sure that's the right term for it, but I can't think of another term for it, because it just doesn't sound very nice, does it?
It's not. There's no genetic modification. It's selection, basically.
Selection. Yeah.
You fertilize all the eggs, and then you pick the ones that are okay.
Yeah. So basically, yeah. What we're saying is then, if you know there is a congenital issue within your bloodline, which is a high chance of being passed on to your child, then absolutely. I think there should be. You know, you should have some screening.
Yeah, and in fact, if there is such a thing as a moral duty. I think then that
it's there,
should apply there as well.
But, I agree.
But the NHS doesn't do that unless they consider it to be a life-threatening.
Yeah, and this HFE department were the ones that were deciding what was considered life-threatening or not. And, you know, some people...
But what might not be... It might not kill you, whatever deficiency you have, but it can certainly make the quality of your life questionable.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I mean, I don't agree with selection... in terms of design the babies, then, in so much as I want a blonde hair, blue eyed child. Don't agree with that at all. I think that's taking it a step too far.
It is, yes.
I don't agree with that. But I think if there is a genetic inadequacy, such as ginger, then I think that's absolutely fine.
I mean, that's really mean of
I'll
him.
Make you pay for that.
Yes,
not this
as
podcast,
well.
But the next one.
I think that's absolutely fine. No,
you've
seriously.
Got a hint of ginger steaming in your beard because you're a leprechaun.
Self-deprecating, that's right.
I'd be first against the wall. But
I haven't got any ginger, by the way.
I just think, you know, if you've got a genetic issue which is going to affect the quality of that child's life, or may result in it having to be permanently cared for...
You don't even have to go that far, Stephen.
It's just the fact that you
have issues that affect the way you can... deal with your life.
Absolutely, then, you know, absolutely, I think there should be an element of selection.
I actually disagree with you completely. Well, not completely, but I disagree with you.
Because you think you should be able to pick blue hair.
I think if it's moral to select for anything, you should be able to select for whatever you want.
Yeah.
I think it's overly decadent. I think it's a waste of money.
Which is my objection to it.
But I think that, you know, you can't deny people it. It's like saying, you know, rich people shouldn't be able to send their kids away to boarding school or to a private school.
No, they shouldn't.
So you're saying then
that
if you decided you didn't want any ginger children, you can have your sperm checked to make sure that it doesn't have a ginger gene to fertilise an egg to make sure you have no ginger children.
Yeah. I'm happy with that. I can't see a problem with it.
As long as you don't take them out of the sunlight, because they'll burn off.
Yeah, if anything, it is. Just because it's, you know, ginger people burn easily. That is a disability. It might not be as severe as Huntington's disease or something.
It's just as bad, though, because if you burn in the sun, I mean, you're
increased risk of skin cancer.
Skin cancer and everything, yes, exactly.
So, you know, and they've been using this genetic screen for women who only are at risk of cervical cancer. You know, they're not guaranteed to have it.
No.
In fact, it's quite a low probability, but it was enough of a reason to do it. I personally think, you know, I don't want to build the next,
Ginger Empire.
Dystopian nightmare where
Brave New World, isn't it?
I'm not for that, and I don't think people are interested in that. I think most intelligent people understand the benefits of genetic diversity.
Well, there's a point, though, John. I think, okay, intelligent people may... stupidly rich people that aren't necessarily intelligent. The two aren't, you know, mutually exclusive. I think there's a real issue, and I think you hit the nail on the head when you said that actually being able to select blonde hair, blue eyes, etc., etc., is decadent.
Yeah.
And that's my issue with that, is that actually it's a waste of money. If that was to be performed on the NHS...
But
if it was... that would be something which would be wrong.
But you can't do that on the NHS, Stephen.
But even from the point of view, well, you never know, you never say never. But even then, from the point of view, if they're paying for it themselves, I still think that's wrong as well.
Is being decadent morally wrong? Is that are you able to make a moral statement on that?
If you have the money...
I'm gonna.
If you have the money and you're not infecting anybody else, then do whatever you like.
No.
Well, Hazel's gone all liberal on as well.
No,
just disagree with that.
No, if they've got the money.
Can you imagine, right? If that sort of treatment had been around when Hitler was running the show.
Well, that's why Hitler was what he wanted. He was a dictator. He ruled.
Yeah, he ruled. But he would have ensured that the master race, the Aryan, 6 foot blonde hair, blue eye.
That's what he tried to do.
Yeah, but he would have had the power to actually do it.
He did it the selection way, the other way though. He did it. You know what? That's what.
To an extent,
that's what Auschwitz
would have,
is all
he would
about.
Have been able
like...
to do it far more efficiently. Basically,
no,
he's German
he
anyway, so it
wouldn't
be quite efficient.
Still, people like yourself would have come up against him and said, "You can't do that."
No, so I actually think that killing everybody with dark hair is more effective than
PGD. That's true.
Actually, it's far more effective.
That's a fair point.
So, you know, I don't think Hitler would have seen that some scientists would come up. Hey, we've come up with this way of, you know, separating. He'd have looked at it and gone, "What? It's only got 1 in 4 chance. Forget it. We'll just go and kill some more Jews." So, you know.
So I'm not laughing at killing more Jews there.
No, it's just a scenario.
That came out a bit wrong.
No, which is exactly what he wanted to do. He wanted the perfect race as he saw it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's my point, isn't it? Is that you're going to get cults saying, right, okay, perfection is this. And that's the issue for me, yeah? Is what is perfection? Yeah, and you know, you've got people with ridiculous money. I want to have a perfect baby. What's perfection?
What is a perfect baby?
Precisely, Hazel. You tell me.
Yes, but
a perfect baby isn't selecting a child with blonde hair and blue eyes, and who's going to grow up to be 6 foot and he's going to have an IQ of 450.
Yeah, just because they have an IQ of something doesn't mean they're going to use it.
I think that child's going to
be the perfect child.
What we disagree on is I just don't see there's anything morally wrong with it. Therefore, I think by trying to stop people from doing it...
And I do. I see a moral issue with that.
Okay, well, explain it then.
Well, I have to explain it. I think it's wrong to pick and choose how you want your baby to look.
Okay.
I don't agree with that.
But if it's your child, then your a child, if it has a mother and a father, it should have some... what's the word I'm looking for? The X and the Y chromosomes would come from both parents, making that child a copy of both parents.
Well, it's not a copy, is it? It's a derivative word.
You know, yeah, you know what I mean? I mean, you look at my child. If you only know me, she looks like me. If you only know her father, she looks like him.
But I just want to know, what is wrong, what is morally wrong with choosing what your child looks like then? Because what you're saying is
you're going to have... a society whereby let's strip it down.
Oh, so it's just a slippery slope.
It's a slippery slope. Let's go back. Okay. Let's look now. We look at magazines. Yeah, completely irrelevant to the topic we talk about now. But you got magazines which show us pictures of stick thin anorexic models. That is the ideal to aspire to. as a woman, that's where we want to be. So I'm a mother.
That's what I've got.
I've got the money to pay for my child to have all of that genetic impurity or a genetic malfunction stripped out of them, and they're going to end up looking like Naomi Campbell.
But how is that the same from someone saying, "I don't want my kid to be a dunce, I'm going to send them to a private school"?
I don't agree with private schools either.
Well, I do. I think if people can afford them,
I don't. I think they're absolute abomination, and should all be scrapped.
So you're not really, you're just completely against capitalism then, really.
Well, yeah,
but
the
thing is, just because your child goes to private school, it should have a better education. It should learn more.
I disagree.
Child is not prepared to put in the work,
they're not
going to
get anything out of
anyway. Help.
Good point.
Yeah, but then it's your own money you've wasted.
But I think the problem is, right,
all I'm saying is, right, if you create a society whereby rich people can create a designer look for what they want for their child, yeah. The people who can't afford it are going to want to aspire to that, and their kids are going to come out short, fat, and pimply, yeah. They're going to have a shit life.
What? But people are aspiring to be like the rich people anyway. Plus, you're talking about like the top 1%. How is the top 1% going to ruin the human race?
You've got to have something to look up to and to admire and think, when I grow up, I want to drive a big black car.
Yeah, for sure.
But
that's a material thing. We're talking about physical here. We're talking about somebody saying, this looks better than that. Why does that look better?
So
why should somebody...
Beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
Precisely.
Everybody
so why should somebody say, actually, being 6 foot... I'm sorry to pick on people with blonde hair and blue eyes, but being 6 foot, having blonde hair and blue eyes is the physical perfection. And that's what I want for my child. And then you've got some peasant kid stuck down the bottom of the ladder who's 5 foot six...
Brown eyes.
Brown hair, brown eyes, maybe a bit of ginger... It's just wrong. That is the moral wrong.
That already exists. You're talking about something that already happens.
No, because there's still
ideals.
No, no,
what
no.
What you're saying is people shouldn't turn down ugly women.
No,
is that what you're saying?
No, no. Well, absolutely not. But no, there's an element of randomness, yeah? So, you know, let's face it, right? David Beckham and Victoria Beckham could have had a child who turned out to be an absolute ergo, yeah? That is just the way it is. That's unfortunate. Mm. As it happens, they've got quite attractive children. Fair play to them, yeah? But there's nothing to say that those kids couldn't have come out looking like the back end of a bus, right? Mm. Like Wayne Rooney, yeah?
I love him.
You might have suspected something else then.
Well, yeah, exactly, yeah? There's nothing to suggest that is pure chance, yeah?
It's very
unlikely. They've had good-looking kids.
It's very unlikely.
However,
the two pretty people have an
child. No, exactly. Which is, you know, that's breeding and stuff and what have you. Okay, fair enough, I understand that. But that's still a natural selection.
Yes.
That is a natural choice,
yes.
Yeah? If they're going out and saying, I only want to have beautiful babies, that's my problem. That's my issue with it.
Okay.
Because why are those ugly kids any less valuable than those beautiful kids?
But to a parent, your child is beautiful whether everybody else thinks it's ugly.
Well, evidently not, because I want to have a blonde hair, blue-eyed, six-foot child.
Do you?
Yeah, absolutely.
You better find yourself a Scandinavian then.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think even that'll work, because I've got ginger
in
me, and that's a dominant gene.
You know, I want a disease-free child,
yes.
And, you know, picking a disease-free child.
No,
you're still picking.
No, disagree. Because you say you want a disease-free child is about having a child which has a good quality of life.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah?
Well, I think
what we're talking about here is we're not talking about what the child wants and what is good for the child. You're talking about what's good for me and what I want. I don't want an ugly child.
It makes you look better by
precisely.
Having a designer child.
That's the morality. That's where it's wrong.
I still don't see how that is immoral. It's like saying,
I disagree with you.
Oh, it's moral for me to want to pick a red car.
But that's how
I
feel. That's how I feel. That is it. I think it's immoral. I've said what I think is immoral.
Yeah,
we're not going to agree, are we?
No, I just haven't.
So, you know,
I mean, I don't say I would go down the line of. I do agree with what Stephen is saying to some respect. But if these people have got the money to be able to do it, there's enough poor people in society that would squash that anyway.
I just think it's morally wrong for them to have that decision, because they're not thinking of the child, they're thinking of themselves.
Well, if
so
I was ginger and I wanted a blonde kid so it wouldn't get bullied in school, I'm thinking of the kid. You know, there's that.
Did you get bullied because you were ginger?
Yeah, damn right I did. And I wore glasses. I just don't think there's enough oil on your slippery slope. That's what I'm saying. It's just like...
Yeah, no, it's not... For me, it's not just the slippery slope. Yeah? It's not just the slippery slope. I just think it's a can of worms that shouldn't be opened. I think what you're saying is you're creating a society whereby somebody is telling, and they do to an extent now, but by having people be able to make that choice, you're just basically saying, kid, you're ugly, you're not going to get anywhere, you're not going to achieve anything, look at my beautiful child.
Of Russell Brand. I mean, he's not a looker, but he's got sex appeal because he's broke, you know, because of, you know, he's broken the mould. He's bonking Katy Perry. When I was single, I'd have given my left testicle to have a go on that.
Yeah.
And he is, you know, self-confessed sex addict as well, isn't he? So
yeah. He's
not short of female attention.
I think the whole idea behind deciding what is, you know, this survival of the fittest and deciding what you're going to select, the whole thing's a massive fallacy anyway, because nobody is able to say what is right and what is wrong. We've already got in society ideals of what is good, which changes over time, and I just can't see how, you know, a couple of rich people wanting to give their kid
that's the tip of iceberg. It wouldn't be a couple of rich people, because that technology is going to become more and more affordable.
Yeah, but some people, Stephen, have the morals that you were talking about, that whatever child God gives me or whatever.
Yeah, it's not
that
I'm worried about
it.
It's the ones who haven't got those morals. That's
yeah,
the ones
but,
I'm worried
but
about.
There aren't that many of those people.
There's enough of us that have
morals. Then fine, the rest of us then have to quash them, wouldn't we? And say,
yeah, but
whether
but,
you
but,
think
but,
your
but,
child
I,
is beautiful,
just think
I think
right,
is real.
Yeah, but I just think it's wrong that they're given the opportunity to be able to do that.
Medical ethics of it, isn't it? Which we will never think. But going back to what this whole topic is about, is it a right or a privilege to have children? It's both.
Yeah, well, we agreed on that.
Yeah.
So,
you know, and if you have children, then it's a privilege to be able to raise those children with your moral beliefs, if that's the word I'm looking for. You know, you bring children into the world, you try and make sure that they grow up with the same values that you have.
Well, you do your best for them and you help them to decide their own values, don't you? You know,
if it comes to the point that that child turns out, you know, that it leads a life of crime or whatever, you still love it. You might not like it very much, but you still love it because it's your child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think of all these people that have committed crimes, they're still somebody's child.
Just quickly, staying slightly on IVF, single women and gay couples.
As long as the child is brought up in a loving relationship, or a loving family, I shouldn't say relationship, a loving family background, and it has parents who love it, who care for it, and raise it with good values, I see nothing wrong with it.
So I noticed there that you said parents. Do you think
parent? I did correct myself.
Do you think two parents better than one?
No.
Okay. Steve, do you think two parents better than one?
Yeah.
Do you think three parents better than two?
Yeah. No. I've been a bit facetious. I don't think a single parent would necessarily do a bad job. That's not what I'm saying at all, because I think, you know, there are single parents who do absolutely fantastic jobs. I think it just makes life easier for parents and for the child if there are two parents.
Yes, I agree.
Whether
there.
That's Adam and Eve or Adam and Steve.
All right, so do you believe that three parents would be better than two then? Make things even easier.
Absolutely. On that logic, yes. I'm not saying a single woman shouldn't have IVF. That's not what I'm saying at all, because I think if they are able to look after a child, there's absolutely no reason why they shouldn't. But I do think that actually life is easier if there are two parents bringing up a child.
Yes,
or
because
three,
it takes
or multiple parents. Because I think it shares the burden,
it shares the load,
which makes life easier. That's the only
thing I'm looking at.
It's nothing about single parents not able to make adequate parents at all.
No, the one thing I would say here, that I think a child brought up by a single parent is far happier if that parent is happy living on their own than having two parents that are not happy with each other
and constantly fighting. I've always said that, you know, I don't agree necessarily
people
with couples saying I'm staying together
for the
sake of the children,
because the children suffer.
Because if you're living in a household where you're constantly arguing and fighting,
or you just don't speak,
that's not a nice environment
hostile,
to be growing up in.
Yes, exactly.
But you know, if you take the adult decision and separate, and you know, you both love your children equally, then that's a far better environment. So, as I say, I've got nothing against single parents at all. I do think, though, that actually it's better for children to have multiple parents, John.
Well, as you say, it separates the burden. It helps. Not that children are not a burden, Stephen. That's the wrong word.
No, but
they're a pain in the ass.
You haven't had one yet.
No, well, it's already a burden. there is a certain burden. Okay, maybe not
burden
the nicest
not the
word,
right word,
but there is a certain
the responsibility
that you have to that child. You know?
Yes, and you have to, in everything you do from December onwards, John, you consider your child first.
Burden first and a child second.
The burden is the wife. Okay, you can edit that.
Did you just say your daughter's the burden?
I didn't say she was my daughter.
And I love the way she thinks you can edit that. Staying in.
No, you have to consider that when you bring a child into this world, whatever you want in life comes second to when you have a child.
And that's about the privilege and the responsibility of having children.
Yes.
Yeah, but I think that's a bit of a kind of platitude at the end of the day, because if you actually have a child because you want one, then it's what is going to take first place.
It doesn't always work necessarily that you put the child first. There are occasions you think,
and there are plenty of people who don't have unplanned pregnancies, aren't
there? And I can't go out tonight because I haven't got a babysitter and I've got a child. Oh, bugger, I'll have to stay home then. So I'll go and get a bottle of wine and stay home instead.
But John doesn't go anyway, because let's face it, he's hardly a social animal, do you know?
But
sitting at home with a bottle of wine is absolutely fine for John.
It's not, you see, even staying home with a bottle of wine, your subconscious is still saying, I can't absolutely drink this whole box of wine, bottle of wine, whatever, and get absolutely bladdered, because I have a responsibility. If my child wakes up in the middle of the night because he's not very well, I have to be
breastfeeding it and stuff like
that's
that.
That's
well,
what
not
the wife's
necessarily
for, isn't it?
Breastfeeding. You can't drink if you're breastfeeding. I'm talking of an older child. If your child is ill in the night, you have to be the responsible parent to be able to get up in the night, change its bed if it's been sick or all.
And that's why multiple parents are better than one.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even multiple parents, if you
because the other one can get up
in
the night.
So, Steve, are we agreed that polygamy is actually the way forward?
Absolutely, yeah.
Great. Excellent. But I wanted to make some announcements, if that's okay.
Yeah, by all means, go for it.
I want to do some announcements. First of all, if you love the show, go to stabler.tv. That's our website. That's where the blog is. You can download other fantastic episodes, including the trolley problem, which was the very popular one, which Hazel was on. So if you loved her voice, you'll love that one.
Thank
she
you,
she wouldn't shut up on it. It was unbelievable. Also, I'd like to announce on the 15th of November, I will be at Skeptics in the Pub in Cardiff. So if anybody
I'll
wants to
well.
Go to that, Stephen's going to be there, both
what
of us.
What night is that on?
That's a Monday night. It starts at 7, goes to 8, and it's got John Dixon.
Councillor John Dixon.
Councillor to John Dixon, the one who...
infamous.
The infamous Councillor John Dixon, who thought that the Church of Scientology was stupid and got a bit of grief over it.
Yeah.
So
what
he's there giving
a
talk. This is in the Promised Land in Cardiff. It's on Windsor Place.
Yeah, that's right. It's opposite the Wetherspoons Pub and the Barclays Bank.
Right. So.
Oh, up the steps.
Yes.
I know.
So yeah. We're going to be there. I don't know, Hazel maybe there. She might pop in for a beer.
Oh, I never know.
But I hate to say it, she is married and she's not available. You know. I know.
However, I'm single and I'm available. So, you know, if you want to turn up, feel free to buy me a drink.
If you ever looked up available in the dictionary, there'd be a picture of Steve there.
The other thing which I'd like to say as well, whilst I make an announcement, Twitter, we've got 13 followers. Come on, there's more of you listening. Get following, get making some comments, make some suggestions. You know, we're quite open to having special discussions like tonight, like the trolley problem. Make some suggestions.
Give us suggestions
tell us what you'd like us to speak about. So, you know, follow us on Twitter, pass some comments.
I also want to big up the debate that's coming up in November before the Hitchens versus Blair debate.
Yeah.
We will be having our very own
version.
We may be having Hazel as an adjudicator or a judge or a chairperson. We'll have to see.
Stop the fighting.
Because it's going to be a tough job and I don't know if Hazel's going to be able to grill me hard enough. It'll have to be somebody.
It'll have to be Ted.
I don't know. No. Okay, it's going to be Hazel. It'll be interesting. We'll see what happens. But yeah, big it up. It is going to happen. It'll be on whatever the podcast is before the Blair versus Hitchens, because we don't want to steal all of it, because otherwise we'll just be parroting whatever they say.
I think they'll be parroting what we say, to
yeah.
be honest with you.
Do you think they listen to our podcast, or your podcast, I should say?
Yep.
To give them tips on
absolutely.
Oh, excellent.
Our podcast.
Can we Twitter it to Blair?
I don't think he follows anything on Twitter. He'd get a lot of hate mail, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be like Gary Glitter opening up a Facebook page. Okay, well, I'm done. Thanks for listening this week. Hope you join us next time. For now, it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
And not so far from me.